Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello, Films to be Buried with crew. This is your producer, Buddy Peace. I am again standing in for your regular host, Brett Goldstein, who you're going to be hearing from later on in the episode, of course. But this is the next in a series of Films to be Buried with Rewind Classics, where we dip into the voluminous Films to be Buried with archives and re-present, repackage, polish up a previous episode. This week, in an episode originally aired on August the 6th, 2020, we revisit a classic appearance from Rob Delaney. You probably know Rob from the big and small screen, from films like Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, to the series Catastrophe, where he stars opposite Sharon Horgan, or maybe his infamous Twitter feed, which has been infamous for well over a decade now. Anyway, it's a lovely episode, right in the glow of the pandemic, and it took a lot of tricky edits to smooth over the many interruptions from Rob's smaller human companions. But the funny is there, of course, alongside the more contemplative moments. Again, just to reiterate, basically due to the ongoing SAG-AFTRA strike, we will be temporarily on pause, and that's sort of why we're doing these sort of Rewind Classics. And it's also sort of, it kind of times in well with a seasonal break, which we have every sort of 10 episodes or so. Also, just to say, if you are not already up to speed on the Patreon feature of the podcast, basically on Patreon, we do a video version of the podcast and an uncut and extended version of the podcast too, which has extra questions, a secret, lots more chatter. And it's a really fun way of supporting because you get extra stuff. And if you enjoy it, then it's a nice way to sort of show appreciation if you feel like that's achievable. And if you feel like that's a doable thing for you. It's all incredibly appreciated, obviously, and only goes back into the podcast. So, yeah, huge thanks if you do decide to do that. If you fancy rating the podcast, that would be awesome too, but don't leave a review of the podcast. In this case, we ask you to leave a review of your favourite film or of just a film. And make it funky. So that would be awesome to hear from you that way too. So enjoy episode 272, which was originally episode 107. A Rewind Classic with the wonderful Rob Delaney.
Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried with. I am joined today by an award winner, an actor, a writer, a stand-up, the first person to use Twitter for funny, and the first person to use Twitter for good. A legend, an icon, a national treasure? Why not? Please welcome to the show, the brilliant Rob Delaney!
Oh, thank you. Wow, that was a lovely intro. I don't know who you were talking about.
It was you, my friend. You. Thank you so much for doing the show.
I have to tell the listeners that I've made poor Rob wait about 20 minutes to try and sort out some audio. He's been very polite. His children told me a joke. It was excellent. And here we are. Firstly, let me tell you, I told you off mic, and now I'll tell you on mic. I watched your stand-up special, Jackie, on Amazon Prime. Barney.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind.
Barney stuff. Really enjoyed it. How long were you in the making of that?
I mean, some of those jokes were a few years old, and then some of them were a few weeks old, you know?
That's exciting.
But yeah, I toured that around England. I can't say the UK because I only toured England. Because I have little kids, so, and I'm not like a road dog, you know, so I go out like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, every other week, you know, my agents will be like, how about weekends? The time when people go to see stand-up? I'm like, no, absolutely not. That's the battle zone of parenting. That's the parenting Olympics that happens once a week. So I have to be home for that. But I had a great time touring around England and sleeping in my very own bed in London every night.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Touring around the south and southwest of London. Did you, speaking of parenting Olympics, how is your lockdown pandemic going?
I mean, first, not only did nobody die, nobody even got COVID-19. So that's massive.
That's very good.
So grateful to be able to say that. Otherwise, you know, my kids are 9, 7, and 1. So it's been pretty intense, you know, like the 1-year-old thinks it's the greatest thing that ever happened because we're all home. The 9 and the 7-year-old are like, why are we only with you hairy old people? I'm talking about my wife and myself and this baby. Like, kids that age really need to be in school. And so there have been good parts and there have been bad parts, but I don't know. You know, like, it's like a lost year academically for kids, but it's not a lost year educationally. Like, they've learned a lot about grit, how to overcome boredom, you know, solving, you know, once a century pandemic problems, you know, that crop up every 100 years or so. So, like, trying to look on the bright side, and, you know, I can't say anything about it without saying that we're in a vastly more comfortable position than most people. So underline everything I've said with who cares? Who cares how it's been for me?
I do. And what about you as a creative and a performer and all of that? Are you writing at home? Are you missing performing?
Oh yeah, I miss performing desperately. I miss the collaborative. Like, I remember when I started writing Catastrophe with Sharon Horgan, I was like, oh my God, this is so much more fun than writing alone. Because I'd written a book right before that, which I really hated.
Did you?
Yeah, I liked the revisions. Like, once the editor read it and was like, hey, what if you did this? Or could you elaborate on that? You know, once it was into like the rewrites, you know, what you would call it if it were a TV show, then I really enjoyed it. But I, working alone, I used to think that I'd be like a solo flyer when I was like in my 20s and thought I was cool. But now that I know I'm not, I like people and I like to work with people. So I really look forward to both doing stand-up for a live audience, you know, being on a set, you know, actually taking something that I've written and turning it into something with other people. So yeah, miss all that desperately. Have gotten a little bit done, but I vacillate from being like incredibly ashamed of myself for how little I've gotten done. And then whenever I do get anything done, I'm like, look what this hero extruded from his soul. So I'm pretty average, I think, for the sort of comedian writer type person, you know, vacillating between the two poles, never at balance, never at peace.
Had you acted before Catastrophe?
A little bit, but nobody really cared. I had to hire myself as an actor before anybody was like, oh, he's fine. I guess we'll put him in our thing as well. Yeah, so I acted some, but it was not until I acted with my own words that people were like, oh, he'll be fine. Oh, we can't get Matt Damon? Yeah, sure. Call him. We call these three people and then call him.
I'm sure you talked about this, but I'm interested. Were you intimidated when you started potentially you were filming with Sharon and she's a lot more experienced in that area? Were you nervous in the beginning or was it like, no, I know what I'm
doing? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt like my writing chops were, you know, I'm hemming and hawing because I want to say proud. I'll just say it. I looked at the scripts and I was like, I like these. But then I would act and I'd be like, oh, God. Oh, Jesus. He is not good. And then
we should have got Matt Damon.
Yeah, totally. So but then over time, I began to grow in confidence and realize, you know, it's one of those things where the more you do it, the better you get. Like, yeah. I think any moron can act.
Yeah.
Like, any moron can become proficient at saying things in a reasonably believable fashion.
Yeah.
But it does take time. I don't think anybody really hits the ground running with acting because it is one of those things where you have to learn all the rules and then forget them. You know what I mean? So to develop the comfort in that crazy environment of lots of people being around, it being utterly fake, having to do multiple takes, to be able to seem like a human being, having, you know, relatable emotions in that weird maelstrom, does take time to develop. So over time, I think I have gotten there. But in the beginning, I was like, oh, too bad. I'm the actor.
Well, you're absolutely brilliant in it. Oh, shit, Rob. Oh, fuck. I forgot to tell you something.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Oh, boy, I should have told you this up front, but I didn't because I'm an idiot. I'll just say it and then...
Okay.
And then we'll... I'll say it. You've died. You're dead. You've died.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. How did you die?
How did I die? My God, I don't know. I hope after a nice meal with my whole family. I'm with my whole family, and then I leave because I forgot something at home, and then a big industrial air conditioning unit that was on a crane being lifted over a road fell on me. So I died instantly. The corpse is unretrievable. I mean, it's just like hamber. It's like a thin red paste because what fell on me was so big. So had a great time. Went home to get, I don't know, a newspaper clipping. Why is it? It's 2020. Why do I need to get a clipping?
Because you were planning a hostage letter?
Exactly.
Okay.
My family and I had kidnapped someone. And then, so I'm really excited because we've kidnapped this person. And then the thing fell on me and I died. Yeah, that's how I died.
You'd be amazed how many people say that. I would like to know what your last meal was then, I guess.
Nothing, not like, it wasn't my favorite because I didn't know I was going to die. So it was just like a nice angel hair pasta with meatballs.
Oh,
and I had a nice salad, a nice rocket-based salad, a nice spicy rocket.
How old were you and how old would you like to be when this happens?
82 is fine.
Okay, that's pretty nice. Dead in the street. I mean, annoying for the people waiting for the newspaper clipping to be brought back, but I guess they never.
My family's so upset they forget to do the ransom, and the person just starves to death in a basement in Croydon.
Oh, dear. Now, Rob, do you worry about death? We talk about death a lot on this podcast. Do you worry about it for yourself?
No, I don't. My family would be sad. So I'd really be worried about them. So just for them, I'd like to stay alive for a very long time. But you may know that one of my sons died a couple of years ago. So my feeling is like, I don't necessarily believe that we'll like be reunited in some physical, you know, Judeo-Christian paradise location where we'll get to like corporeally hang out. I doubt that. In fact, I hope that isn't true because I think that would be very boring for everyone who's been dead for more than a half an hour. They'd be like, okay, wow, this is a lot like Earth. So, but I know that when I die, I would get to experience what he experienced and thus share something with him. So I don't want to die anytime soon, but when I do, let's do it, baby. I really am not worried about it at all. In fact, I look forward to it. Yet, I hope it's decades into the future.
Man, that's very touching. That. Do you have a kind of thought of what the afterlife is if you don't think it's sort of bodies hanging out together?
I don't. I hope that it's way, way, way beyond my imagination. You know, like when I think about, like, you know, capital G God, because I grew up, I went to a Jewish nursery school. I grew up in a very Jewish community, but my family's Catholic. And then I went to Catholic school. So I had like Judeo-Christian God, history, folklore, whatever you want to call it, belief, you know, that I marinated in through the early part of my life. And the way that that was described didn't really work for me, because I just don't want God to be something that, like, we can imagine. How boring, you know, they say, you know, God created man in his image and man being a gentleman returned the favor. Like, the idea of, imagine a God with like an ego, imagine a God that wanted or didn't want, you know. So I don't believe in a deity. So hopefully we really can't even imagine what it is, you know? But yeah, I hope that it's so beyond us that we can't even imagine. Like, if my just anemic, cluttered, horrible, tiny human imagination has any idea what happens next, then it must suck. So I'm super at peace with not knowing what happens next. But I don't think it's bad, because it's going to happen. So it's probably, you know, fine. Mm.
I think that's right. I think that is, well, what do I know? But I do think that's right. I think it's meant to be beyond our brains, isn't it? Anyway, I know everything you've been through, and I'm so, so sorry for it. And I can't,
thank you.
I can't imagine, but I also imagine that changes your outlook of the bigger picture in a huge way. That
it does, yeah.
We don't need to go into, but anyway, I have love for you. There is a heaven. And it's better than your little brain could have come up with.
Oh, good. Because it has a VCR.
It's got VCRs. Everyone there's obsessed with films. Yeah. And in this heaven, they're obsessed with films. And all they want to know about is your life through the medium of film. And the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing?
Yeah. And for me, that's The Wizard of Oz.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's your first film.
That I remember seeing, yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, crazy about it to this day. I often get angry that whenever people talk about Gone with the Wind, I'm like, do you know that the same director made The Wizard of Oz that same year? I mean, I guess his name, which I can't remember, is like Vincent. I'm surprised I can't remember. I think he took over for Gone with the Wind, because back then it wasn't as important who directed it as who produced it, because they had way more power, or rather kind of control over the shape of the film. Because Gone with the Wind, I hate Gone with the Wind. I mean, I really think it's a mess and long and bad. But Wizard of Oz is amazing. I mean, it has everything. It's like scary, even if you're an adult, with the flying monkeys and melting witches. I mean, what it captures in the id, you know, of like human fear, and the elements and the music. And it's just amazing.
What was the circumstances you were watching it? Do you remember, like, was it at home? Were you with family? Like,
yeah, it would have been on our TV. It would have come on television on a Sunday afternoon or something. So we would have watched it then with commercials.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little town outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've watched it with my kids. My little sister watched it. She was 5 years younger than me. So I watched it, and then she watched it. We didn't have VCRs when I was a kid.
So it was just what was on the
But we did by her childhood. So by the time she was old enough to want to watch it, she could watch it again and again and again. I didn't have that luxury. I grew up at a time before petrol and flight and video, home video technology, but just the best. Wizard of Oz.
Lovely. What is the film that scared you the most, and do you like being scared?
Love being scared.
Do you?
Yeah. As a kid, for me, it was a film that it came on TV. I think it wasn't a VCR rental. I said, Dad, can I watch this with you? And he's like, it's going to be scary. I know it's going to be scary. And I was like, yeah, but I want to, please. And he was like, all right. And and this is a film called The Island with Michael Caine, you know, a mid to low tier Michael Caine film. What? Basically, it had some modern pirating going on. And what happened was a guy, like a canoe with like a tarp over it, like bumped into his nice sailboat. And he looked over to him. He's like, hey, what's this? And as he leaned over, a guy pulled out the tarp and came and just buried a hatchet deep in this guy's forehead. And I'm super young at this point, like maybe 6 or 7. And I lost my mind and was like, why did you let me watch that? And he's like, I told you to go. I shouldn't have, blah, blah, you know. And I slept for months afterwards, fully encased. Like I'd wrap myself up like a burrito on the sides and the top and the feet. Like I like sewed myself into a blanket, like so I couldn't breathe. And that was the first film that scared me.
And you still like being scared?
Yeah. Oh God, I love it. Yeah. I mean, like Midsummer, my wife and I loved that. We saw that. That was like such a great date for us. Just joyously. Really? Yeah. We love horror movies. My wife began to use horror movies like therapeutically when our son was in the hospital, just because nothing that any filmmaker could conceive of would be as terrifying as what was happening to us. Mm-hmm. So I think it was almost like how you'd give Ritalin to an overactive kid or something. Like we would relax with horror movies.
Yeah.
So Ari Aster's, the Ari Aster double feature of Hereditary and Midsummer in particular, very helpful for us. We actually went and saw Midsummer with another friend of ours who had a child die. It was Hereditary. And, the three of us were just sitting there laughing and having a good time while the rest of the audience was like, what is wrong with these people? And we were like, quite a bit is wrong with us.
That's so, I have talked about this on the podcast before, but you would be amazed. Look, I've had 100 comedians on this. I reckon 8 of them say they like scary films. Most of them hate being scared.
Can't get enough.
Yeah, me too. And then I read this whole thing this week. Someone sent me, like, you were right about science, like genuine psychology science results, that it's good for you, that horror is good for you, and that it's a way of dealing with the terrible things that happen, the thoughts you have and the fears of death. And
One film I found super therapeutic was the first Safdie Brothers film. Am I saying that? I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Benny and John. Good Time.
I love Good Time.
Yeah, me too. Because that one's like so tense.
So stressful.
It's like Texas Chainsaw Massacre level tense. And then at the end, I was just like, oh, all that stuff I was just watching and feeling, that wasn't happening to me. And then like sleeping like a baby.
That's funny. What about the film that made you cry the most? And are you a big crier?
I love when a movie makes me cry.
Yeah.
That would be a tie between Brokeback Mountain and The Elephant Man.
Oh, what a double bill. A heartbreaking double bill. Elephant Man, David Lynch is one of my heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so magical and insane that he made The Elephant Man after making Eraserhead, and that Mel Brooks, that it was Mel Brooks' idea. It makes me love Mel Brooks even more than I already love Mel Brooks. Yeah. And I just read David Lynch's half autobiography, which is really mad and fascinating. Yeah. And there's his story of making The Elephant Man is like, he was very young and he'd only made this basically student film. And he went to London and I think Anthony Hopkins was a bit of a dick to him. I think most of the actors were a bit like, who's this fucking American kid coming here to make this English story? And he said he walked through this street in London and he found this street that was like an old Victorian street. And he says in the book, and I felt this wind rush through me and suddenly I understood and could see all of Victorian England. And then you watch the film and you go, yeah, I believe you.
Yeah.
I think you got it.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I remember watching that in a little cubicle. I would have been about 18 at NYU and getting it out of the film library and watching it and just weeping in, you know, a public library with like pretty girls around. And I'm like, so beautiful.
Really good film. And Brokeback Mountain.
Okay, so Brokeback Mountain, just these guys, my God, the pain of this secret that they have to hold is just unbelievable. And it's really weird because like that film is just so brilliantly made in every possible way that I think it just would speak to anyone. You know, like I happen to not be gay, okay, but sometimes I wonder, like, did it hit me so hard because of like alcoholism, you know, like Because I remember, I'm just trying to think, like, what secrets have I held on to that hurt so much? And I remember, like, getting sober and finding out that the just horror that I felt inside of myself and, like, had a name and, like, might even have a treatment. The unbelievable relief that I felt of feeling like, okay, now people are going to know what this is. Like, so many people didn't already know, but I was trying to hold on to it so tightly. But I, you know, of course, that movie resonated with people who are not alcoholics and who also aren't carrying around deep, dark secrets, you know.
But I think you're right. I think everyone has a thing there. They feel shame or they feel darkness in themselves. And
yeah.
I really love that. So really, how old were you when you got sober?
25.
Okay. Nice.
And I'm 43 now, for those people listening who aren't my mom.
Congratulations. Yeah. Tell me this. What is the film that people don't like? It's critically not acclaimed, but you are like, you guys are dummies. This film's a masterpiece.
One film that I don't know why I saw it, because I can't imagine I would have rented it. This seems like a dad rental. Rising Sun with Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes, based on the Michael Crichton book. So that film, first of all, if Wesley Snipes is in it, I watch it. So I don't know that I really need to defend this choice. But the film is just like, it's quite boilerplate. And I guess just the interplay. I mean, they're an odd couple. Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes.
They don't have that odd couple.
Yeah, like they don't have that organic frisson that Danny Glover and Mel Gibson do in Lethal Weapon. You know, they're not. But hey, if they don't team up to take down the Japanese caricatured bat guys, you know, then I don't know what they do. So there's just sort of darkness. Oh, there's a little sexiness. Just that movie was fun to me. And whenever it came on, I never turned it off. Amazingly, that came out the same year as a genuine Wesley Snipes masterpiece, Demolition Man, with Sylvester Stallone. But like, that's not a guilty pleasure. That's just an unadulterated pure pleasure. Everybody loves Demolition Man. And Sandra Bullock. How could we forget Sandra Bullock?
No, we mustn't ever forget her. What is the film that you used to love? Loved it. Mm-hmm. You've watched it recently and you felt, oh no, this does not hold up for me for whatever reason that might be.
Spanish Prisoner.
David Mamet.
Yeah, Steve Martin and
Campbell Scott
and David Mamet's wife. Oh, it's crazy. I think I might have seen that like twice in the cinema when it came out. And then my wife and I watched it recently and just utterly sucks, you know? Yeah, it's really a weird, stilted, halting mess. It would be a good short story because it's just a little gimmick, you know? Yeah,
I don't remember it. It's all twist, isn't it? It's all like con job, like all this.
Films. Yeah. I mean, it would be a fun O. Henry adjacent type short story, but in David Mamet's hands, it wasn't a good film. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting as I think David Mamet theoretically he wrote one of the his students wrote one of the only good books on acting, which is called. Truth. Practical Handbook for the Actor.
Oh, okay.
By the Atlantic Theater Company. That's a good, simple book. Because a book, you can't learn how to act from a book. You just have to do it again and again and again and again. Mm-hmm. But this book is the thin, thin volume that is worth a shit, you know?
What's your main takeaway from that book?
What would this mean for me? How do I get what I want? You know, what am I trying to do here? Mm-hmm. You know, that's all.
Yeah,
that's it. That's acting. You know, if you want to put on a funny nose or learn how to go cobble, literally like Daniel Day-Lewis in Italy before you make, I think he did that before The Crucible. You can do that too. That it won't hurt your performance.
No,
but, Tom Cruise is really one of my favorite actors because he doesn't really chameleonize too much in between roles. But since by all accounts, he's insane, that's really great for acting, you know, or like Nicolas Cage, because they utterly believe what they're doing, and as a result, so do you. You might not want to have lunch with Tom Cruise, but God damn it, I bet you want to watch his movie and jump up and clap when it's over.
Yeah. He's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Rob Delaney, comedian, actor, writer. What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily because the film itself is any good, but because of the experience you had around seeing the film that will always make it special to you.
Right. So I came up with a negative one for this. I hope that's okay.
Of course it is.
I bet a lot of people are like, you know, oh, well, I first met Lucy and we held hands.
Yeah.
No. For me, there's a film called Instinct with Anthony Hopkins and I think Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
And it's real, really hot garbage. And I happened to be, I lived like in downtown New York in the late 90s. And I had some meeting up in Harlem. I don't even remember what for. And I got up there quite early. Or like, I don't know, I had two meetings in Harlem or something. So there's a 2-hour window that I've got, right? And it's raining. So I'm like, okay, I got to go to a movie, you know? And hear my little angel bells.
You got your wings.
Ha, ha, ha. So I've got 2 hours to kill. It's raining. I'm in a neighborhood I don't know well, so I'm not able to duck in just anywhere, and I can't explore the lovely neighborhood because it's raining. So I got duck in an Instinct, Anthony Hopkins, Academy Award winning Titan, Anthony Hopkins, and Cuba Gooding Jr., who he might have also won an Academy Award at that point. So, you know, you're thinking, all right, we got pedigree. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the movie was so bad that I walked out, even having paid for it. And at this point, I have no money. Like, whatever the $7 it cost me to buy the ticket, like, was an important $7. And I was like, nope. I just left and I just stood in the rain for like the last like 70 minutes. I was like, I'd just rather get rained on. And then I went to my second meeting wet because that movie was such unbelievable trash. Oh, second runner up.
Yeah.
Meet Joe Black.
Go on.
By Martin Brest. With again Anthony Hopkins, who of course I love like anybody, but he's done some turkeys. Meet Joe Black was so bad that I actually saw it at a screening at NYU, and Martin Brest was at it, and I had to like run out of there because I couldn't be in the presence of Martin Brest because he would have been like, any questions? I would have been like, that sucked, and they would have been like, not a question, please leave.
Any questions? Why all of it? Can you explain the thing I never understood about Meet Joe Black? Maybe I've said this before, but I haven't said it in a very long time if I have. What I don't understand about Meet Joe Black is basically the message, which, okay, Meet Joe Black, she meets a guy, she falls in love at first sight. He then gets hit by 25 cars that takes about 7 minutes. He's dead. Death comes to visit, dressed as, looking like the guy she fell in love with. But it's not the guy she fell in love with,
right.
It's Death.
Yeah.
She then falls in love with Death.
Right.
But Death then has to go back home to be in Death. So Death then leaves, but as a treat, sends back Brad Pitt, the original guy, and they get together. But the guy she's fallen in love with is not this guy. It was Death. But he just looks the same, and it doesn't matter. And at first I was like, what's the fucking message of this? And then I was like, oh, the message is, if you look like Brad Pitt, anyone will love you regardless of your personality.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what's inside.
And then I thought, that's the perfect match. That makes sense.
I mean, that's very valid in this world. Yeah.
And actually, I retract everything I said in Masterpiece. What is the film you most relate to, Rob Delaney?
I know that they're like big, famous movies, you know, but the fact is Trainspotting and Requiem for a Dream, they're not my favorite movies. Yes, they're good, but that's really what alcoholism and addiction felt like for me. Like, I watched those movies and I just like, like really felt that. I just remembered this as well. Mm-hmm. Even more than those was The Two Towers. The second one where Gollum splits in two and there's a good one and a bad one and they're like battling each other. That is actually better than Trainspotting and Requiem for a Dream at capturing what it felt like for me to be in the throes of alcoholism and addiction. I should also say, I don't really like the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying they don't really speak to me personally. Those massive tentpole event you know, billion-dollar budget movies rarely tickle me on the inside. It's not a value judgment. It's just me, my genetic makeup. However, when Gollum splits in two, I was like, I feel that.
I'm double Colin.
Yeah. So
that's the best bit.
And then another one, and this is so embarrassing. A chorus line, the movie,
yes,
is a billion percent what it feels like to get started in entertainment, because the odds are so against you. You have to put out like the purest essence of who you are and just have it spit on and slapped around. So if you want to know what it's like to have to like make your bones in the entertainment, a chorus line is stop one. If you can't handle that, then definitely don't take the ride.
Were you always doing what you're doing with, like, from university onwards?
So that's what I went to college for. I studied musical theater at university.
Why aren't you doing musicals?
I'm actually in talks right now. I'm in the most serious talks yet about doing a West End musical. I won't say any more than that, but the right thing may have come along and we're talking about it.
I speak for everyone when I say, yes.
Yeah, dude, I'd be pretty thrilled. I can't say what it was, but I actually this wasn't because of coronavirus. It was because Disney bought 20th Century Fox. Mm-hmm. But I had gotten a huge role in a huge musical, and then Disney bought 20th Century Fox and was like, just put it on the shelf. So I'm trying to get into musicals. So I'll keep you posted. But
cool.
Yeah, no, so I did that. And then my final year of university, I went and saw some comedy and I was like, oh, screw musicals. I want to do comedy.
Yeah.
And then I had a detour because of drinking. Mm-hmm. And in being in America where I needed to get, sometimes you just have to shoot a dream behind the barn and kill it because you have to get a job that has benefits so that you can get health insurance, because mm-hmm. that's how America works.
Yeah.
So I thought for a few years in my 20s, like, oh, I guess it's just not going to happen because I have to work at this shit factory to get health insurance so that I can afford things like surgery should I need it, which I did after the car accident that I was in when I was 25. So then when I was 30, is that right? I was like, I'm doing it, screw it. And I just said, yeah, I'm a comedian. And the rest of the world was like, no, you're not. And or at the very least, we're
you
not
work at the shit factory.
Yeah, we're not interested in what you're peddling. And I was like, I'll show you. And, you know, then some years of hand to mouth. And then over time, it has worked out.
It's great.
Thank goodness.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12. Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Here we go. This is probably what everyone's been waiting for. Rob Delaney, mm-hmm. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
So I have two answers here. Sexiest ever. I think it was like 17 mm-hmm. when the film Sirens came out. And the perfect age. And you've got Elle McPherson, mm-hmm. Tara Fitzgerald. All these women. I remember like Elle McPherson talking in interviews how she like gained weight for it, which like, hello. Oh, like, and just, so yeah, I mean, for those who haven't seen it, it's basically, it's like a fun, it's a good movie with a tremendous amount of nudity where Hugh Grant as a minister and his wife, Tara Fitzgerald, are sent to deepest Australia to start a church or something. And then they have to tame this wild artist who likes to paint naked women. And son of a gun if they don't wind up getting tamed. But I mean, it's a bright, airy, lovely, like women like it. It's not, you know, it's not... exploitative or anything, but yeah, the thread count is low, if you know what I'm saying. And so I remember seeing that at age 17 and being like, I really want to spend some time in Australia, and this is a special time for me seeing this film. I imagine a future where I'll be renting it not infrequently. And so I would say that was the one for me.
Yeah. What was your second
one? Oh, this isn't the sexiest, but it is a recent sexiness where I watch and I'm like, come on, man. And that's Mrs. Incredible's butt in The Incredibles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, and especially whenever she like complains about the suit being tight or whatever, I'm like, yeah, that it is. Yes, it is. Yeah, it is tight. This is incredible. You know, and I'm like, it's just that butt. Come on, man. You know, I'm trying to watch a movie with my family and you're just parading this butt around.
What are you doing to me, Disney?
You know, this weapons grade butt.
Well, the subcategory to this question is traveling boners worrying wider. Film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. Is your answer The Incredibles or do you have a different answer?
Oh, I'm sorry. That was it. Oh, that yeah, was right. That was it. The Incredibles. Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's a very good answer.
I mean, I don't believe in like shaming people for their desires or whatnot. So I'm not actually embarrassed about that. But I am guessing the animators weren't like, yeah, let's make this 43-year-old be like, growl at the screen while he's watching a family with its 1-year-old wife and kids, you know.
Rob Delaney, what is objectively the greatest film of all time?
I think that for me, the greatest in that evoking the widest range of emotions from the most amount of people, the greatest objectively, I think, is The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Because it's scary, it's mm-hmm. funny, it's musical, it's archetypal, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it's a very special film. And you don't really look at it and you're like, oh, you know, there's no parts that are like threadbare. Like, you can look at aspects of Star Wars, you know, mm-hmm. A New Hope and be like, oh, all right, okay. And then, you know, but you can't really do that with Wizard of Oz.
It's also profound, the thing of the wizard behind the curtain, the little man behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that holds up. That holds up in all aspects. What is the film you can or have watched the most over and over again?
I think that that would be Out of Sight.
Oh, I love Out of Sight.
Yeah, and Lost Highway.
Oh, Rob Delaney. Yeah. Two of my absolute favorites.
Now, let's start with Lost Highway.
Yes, please.
I don't think it's the best David Lynch film. Okay. It's just the one that I've watched the most. I feel like you can dip in and out of it maybe a little better than certain films of his, because there's episodic aspects, you know. Mm-hmm. And in terms of his sort of dualistic, I think, trilogy, because the films where you've got this guy is the side of that guy, or they're both, is Blue Velvet, Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive, right? Yeah. Like, there's an argument to be made. He told the same story three times, three different ways. Great. More people should do that if they're as brilliant as him. But with Lost Highway, I think, since it's actually literally a different actor playing them, and just all the different vignettes with, like, the cowboy at the ranch. Oh, no, that's Mulholland Drive. I'm sorry.
No, Lost Highway's got the mystery man.
Devil on the phone.
Yeah. The phone is...
You know, the house that explodes and the saxophone and Pullman and a crazy, what's his face? Getty. if you haven't read any interviews, like recent interviews of him, you really have to. He is so out to lunch. Yeah. In a terrible way, where like multiple generations of billionaire money have just made it impossible to be a real person,
but he
did fine in this one film.
Yeah,
so just crazy about that movie. And then Out of Sight, I would submit, is pretty much like a Rosetta Stone for understanding the language of film. Mm. Not that Soderbergh didn't break a whole lot of new ground with that film and the films he did leading up to it, but it's a wonderful sort of way to begin to understand film, the way that he made that. Plus, you can feel the kinetic energy of it and the camera work. And you, if you want to, you don't have to, because it's a totally wonderful propulsive experience that pulls you right along. But if you want to think about how it was made, you can kind of see how the sausage was made. Like, you can feel the camera, you can feel the quickness, you can feel it's like assemblage, you know what I mean? And the way that it plays with time. So it almost like shows its work in a way that rewards repeated viewings.
Also, Out of Sight is one of the sexiest films of all time.
Oh, just tremendous. Tremendous, yeah.
I love Lost Highway so much. And
yeah,
it's quite hard to get hold of. It's one of his films that sort of got lost a bit. It's brilliant, Lost Highway.
Mm, love it so much.
Yeah. Okay, what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Okay, so I mentioned Meet Joe Black earlier because I couldn't wait to talk about it. That was terrible. And of course, there's like worse low budget films and student films, but with that kind of money, your film has to be good. So that's why I think, you know, higher stakes, sometimes higher failures. And it could be, this could be an example of how, like, I thought Spanish Prisoner was good in the cinema when I was young, and then I saw it recently and it sucked. Maybe this film is good, but in the theater, I was like, are you kidding me? Was The End of Violence by Wim Wenders. I just remember being Gabriel Byrne, Bill Pullman, Andy McDowell, and Wim Wenders, right? I mean, and I just remember being like, well, this is such a mess. And it had all this like philosophical voiceover. Mm. And I just remember thinking, I think I've just seen the worst movie I've ever seen. I think I actually saw it in France. I lived in Paris in 1997 and 1998.
Really?
And yeah, I saw it in Paris. Paris is the best movie city in the world because they have all these repertory movie theaters. Mm. So you can be like, oh, it'd be great if I could see Lost Highway at 2:50 p.m., you know, 3 miles across the city from me. And you probably can.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, but I remember seeing so many great movies and then just seeing that turd ball and being really turned off. And as such, as a result, never investigating the world of Wim Wenders after that, who people love, probably reason. He's probably great. That film was so bad that I was like, no, just shut the door.
He's like Anthony Hopkins. He's done a lot of good and a lot of bad. Yeah. You're in comedy. You're very good at it. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Yeah, so comedy, I don't know. There are lots of good ones. But what made me laugh a lot recently is the Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which has been not getting good reviews. I don't care. But what I liked about that movie was that, yes, it starred Will Ferrell, but in fact, he has a lot less screen time than you'd think from a film billed as which he also wrote. So I think he was quite generous with all the supporting performers. Rachel McAdams is amazing in it.
Great.
And then Dan Stevens' performance is one for the ages. Yeah. I could not get enough Have you seen it yet?
No, I've not seen it yet.
Okay. Yeah. So Dan Stevens as the Russian entrant into the Eurovision that they're following is truly out of this world. And it's funny because the only thing else that I've seen him in is Downton Abbey.
Mm-hmm.
And the first season of Downton Abbey, my wife and I snorted up like cocaine, couldn't possibly get enough of that glorified soap opera. Really crazy about it. And then it sort of dropped off for me. Again, not a value judgment. If I don't like something, that doesn't mean it wasn't good. It just means it didn't speak to me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like good in that as the romantic lead guy that one of the sisters fell in. You know, he's just like handsome and fine, you know. But then in this, he has comic chops that are deadly. Like, for example, like all I can say is you and I would do well to spend a lot of time in the comedy gym before we prepared to meet him in a dark alley.
Wow.
I've seen stuff as funny, but not really. I don't think I've seen a funnier comedy performance. I mean, it's out of this world.
Holy shit.
And the film does move at a different pace than a lot of comedy. So I understand that it might cause consternation with some stupid reviewers. But I love it.
Always hate comedies. Comedies almost universally are shitted on by critics. I think critics never get comedies.
Yeah.
It's like one in 20, they'll go, oh, I get it.
And it's always fun to see, because some serious actors have a hard time with comedy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this, Rachel McAdams and Dan Stevens have an easy time with it. and so super impressed by them. Of course, Will Ferrell's funny. That's no surprise. You know, we're used to him being amazing, but these guys hold their own and I'm just incredibly impressed. I don't know Dan Stevens. I've never met him, but I actually wrote him a message and was like, good God, you are amazing. Like the way like an old man might do in old Hollywood. I throw it off a note. I dictated a mash note to my gal Friday. And
you stole the show in Deadpool 2.
Correct.
How much?
Thank you.
You really stole the show in Deadpool 2. And it's really impressive as well because you're really not in it much. I mean, what are you in it for? But you're the thing that everyone remembers.
Yeah, sort of a vignette. Yeah, that was incredible fun.
Yeah.
And I was shocked for such a big movie how nimble they were as a production.
Oh, great.
So, you know, Ryan Reynolds is the driving force behind those films. You know, he co-writes them with Rhett Reiss and Paul Wernick. And then David Leitch directed it. Even the studio, 20th Century Fox, who made it, everybody there was just really like, hey, let's try this fun thing, you know? And so I was amazed how much it felt like being on the set of Catastrophe. Like, hey, let's give this a shot, you know? Because some bigger films don't feel that way. You know, you're kind of slotting into something that they reverse engineered to include all these different set piece action scenes and whatever. But this was just great. They were like, yeah, let's have some fun. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think might be funny here? You know, and it's so collaborative and fun. I can't say enough positive stuff about everybody who made that movie. So, yeah, just we had a lot of fun.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen. Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals? Marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas? Ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Right, Rob Delaney, you've been amazing. And
oh, thanks. This has been great.
Now, the thing is, when you were having dinner with your family, you were 82 years old, you were all there, you had a lovely time. Had the hostage in the basement. You were like, oh, you said to the family, hey, you, by the way, you just had angel pasta and like marinara, nothing special.
Yeah.
You were like, I need to get newspaper clippings so that we can cut out hostage's note for the thing. You walked outside, you walked into the road. Industrial size air conditioner on a crane, just being moved from one house to another. Dropped by accident, splattered you, pancaked. No one even knew you were that flat into the road. But I had a hunch because I remembered the podcast. And I went along and I was like, oh, and they moved the air conditioning unit. And I was like, look at the fucking statement. Basically, you were road. So I then had to get a digger, dig up the road around you. You were half tarmac. Half man. So I had to chop up all the bits, stuffed it all in a coffin. But the thing is, I brought a coffin that was your size. I hadn't brought a coffin that was you plus tarmac. So it ended up.
Yeah,
it was, you know, it was absolutely packed. It was packed in there. There's really only enough room in this coffin for me to slip one DVD down the side for you to take to the other side. And on the other side, every night is movie night, and one night is your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone on the other side?
I think Before Midnight. I'm sorry that I just said that.
It's okay.
I mean, some of the films I've mentioned, Before Midnight, strong candidate. Out of Sight, strong candidate.
You can take Before Midnight. No one's taking it, and it's brilliant.
Okay.
Rob Zane, is there anything you would like to tell anyone to watch of yours, to look out for, to listen to before we say goodbye?
No, I mean, everything that of mine that will be released has been, you know, paused because of coronavirus. So the recent thing would be my stand-up special, which you could watch.
It's
on Amazon Prime in the UK and the US and everywhere.
Rob Delaney, I think I speak on behalf of everyone when I say, A, this has been brilliant and thank you. And B, I really hope that everything works out with the pandemic and everything so that we get to see you in a musical. The rest of the
Oh, day. Thanks, man. God, I do too. That would be great.
That'd be so great. thank you for your time. I'm going to stop the recording
thank you.
Now. Have a wonderful
right.
time on the other side. Good night.
Thank you.
So that was episode 272 of Films to be Buried With, starring Rob Delaney. Thanks to him for appearing on the show for a Rewind Classic. Please visit Brett's Patreon page at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get the uncut and extended episode of the podcast. And there is a video option too, which is always awesome. And really, really nice to get a visual on the episodes. There's a huge archive there. It started a little way into the podcast, but there's so much stuff on there. So it's awesome. So yeah, you will not be disappointed. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to me for editing and production, which I'm getting used to saying as a sentence at the end of the podcast. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting the podcast. Thank you to Adam Richardson for the artwork and to Lisa Lydon for the photography. Join us next week for another fabulous, of course, episode of Films to be Buried With. But until then, that is it for now. Have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, Be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen. Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.